Norrie disease is a rare genetic condition causing blindness or severe visual impairment from birth. In addition to this, almost all affected individuals suffer from progressive hearing loss, often starting in early childhood, and the disease can also have other effects. Ethan is 14 years old and is living with Norrie disease, and his mum, Teresa Peacock, who is co-founder of the Norrie Disease Foundation, joins me now. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Simon.
Now, how's Ethan doing then?
He's doing pretty well. He's in a mainstream school. He's just in the run-up to end-of-year exams, so he's very grumpily doing revision at home at the moment.
How has the disease, Norrie disease, actually affected him to date then?
So Ethan has he's registered as severely sight impaired. He's got no vision at all in one eye, and the other eye he's got a tiny bit of useful vision. Basically, his retinas formed into tubes, which means he's not able to see very well. And currently, that's the only effect on him. He hasn't had any hearing loss as yet, but that's something that we do get regular yearly checkups for. So the way it affects him, obviously, is all those challenges for anybody who's severely sight impaired. You know, like learning materials need to be in a different format. So he's a braille user, has tactile diagrams, he uses a white cane to get around. So yeah, it's all those sort of everyday things is the way that it affects him the most.
And the trouble with one of these diseases that's a progressive disease, and you don't know whether it will or whether it won't extend, that must be a bit of a weight hanging over him.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, particularly now, the age that he is. When he was younger, I mean, to be honest, when he was younger, we didn't know as much as we do now about it. So we didn't really sort of think about it that much. But as he's sort of becoming, you know, more aware of it, the idea that potentially he might lose his hearing is definitely something that I think plays on his mind. Particularly, he's a really sort of passionate musician. He plays the piano, plays the trumpet, he's in a band with his brother. So music is, you know, really important to him. So I think that the possibility of him losing some of that enjoyment, I think, is at times, you know, quite frightening.
Take us back to the early days. I mean, when did you first know something was wrong?
So I first noticed something was wrong with Ethan's eyes probably when he was around sort of 6 weeks old. I had a healthy pregnancy on what appeared, you know, when he was born. Nothing was picked up at the hospital. I mean, I think there were a few checks that were missed. For example, I think you're supposed to check for things like cataracts, and I think if they'd done that, they would have picked up on it earlier. But yeah, when he was about six weeks old, I thought he doesn't look like he's focusing. And we ended up taking him to our local GP, and we couldn't get seen at our local hospital for a few months, so we sort of rang around, managed to get him into Addenbrookes in Cambridge, and it was there that we were sort of told that he basically was blind and was unlikely to see anything. And then the consultant at the time, Miss Allen, who has got a background in genetics, she knew of Norrie disease and said she thought that was a likely cause. So following some blood tests, that was confirmed. I think probably he was probably about 5 months old.
Most of us don't actually really have much dealings with people with sight loss unless we're living with it ourselves or we know somebody. A diagnosis of blindness in your child, that must have been devastating.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's a feeling that, you know, I can picture it like it was yesterday. It's, you know, nearly 14 years ago now. You know, I still get that sense of, you know, just hearing that news for the first time. And, you know, initially it's just that just complete shock, because I think most people, when they have a child, you kind of don't expect anything to be different. And like you say, I hadn't at that time any personal experience of people with vision loss, so it's kind of entering this this unknown world. But at the same time of that shock, I think, as parents, we just had this sudden urge to kind of, right, we're going to do everything we can to ensure our child has the best opportunities he had. I mean, I remember Googling, I think, on the same day that he was, that we were told that he had vision loss, you know, looking at accessibility at universities. I mean, he was only a few months old at the time. But it's kind of that shock, but also I think that drive to try and ensure that, you know, he can get the best opportunities despite the limitations that his sight loss might bring for him.
Because childhood's one aspect of it, but you're looking ahead and thinking, you know, he's going to grow up and be a man and make his way in the world. Does that fill you with a bit of dread at times?
It does, and I think I sometimes, like, well, quite a lot, I think as a mother, I feel just constantly guilty. Like, have I done enough to prepare him for adulthood? You know, should I be getting him to do more around the house so he's independent? You know, am I making the right choices for him? It's all those sorts of things, which I think are, I think they're heightened. I mean, I have we have another son, Jasper, who's 11, who doesn't have any sight loss. You know, and there's a sense of obviously about making the right decisions for him, but I think there's like an added element being the parent of a child with vision impairment of, you know, there are more things that come with it that you don't have with a child who has no additional needs. So, you know, there's hospital appointments, there's various meetings about school, making sure he's got the right support, all of that sort of stuff. So there's a lot that kind of comes with, you know, that parental responsibility and just kind of trying to do the best for him and, you know, prepare him for the future, because our hope for him is that he has a happy, independent adult life where he's working and got his own. Well, I think most parents want their children to move out at some point, and so for him to have his own house and relationships and all those sorts of things, I think that's what we would hope.
Yeah, you're hoping for all the things that you dreamed about, aren't you?
Yes, yeah.
That kind of thing, yeah. What about the dynamic in the family? Because, like you mentioned there, Ethan's got a brother, and you're having to spend perhaps sometimes more time with Ethan due to the responsibilities and appointments. It must be hard to keep that balance.
It is hard, and you know, I am really conscious of that. Like at the moment, with Ethan's exams coming up, so I've been preparing like revision materials for him at home, like brailing stuff up notes for him and making tactile diagrams for, you know, various things, just so he's got stuff to revise for. And I'm, you know, acutely aware that all that time that I'm spending doing that, I'm not actually spending it with either of my children. But yeah, I do worry sometimes for, my other son, that he might, you know, feel a sense of resentment. I don't think he does, but, you know, I can imagine that, you know, he possibly could if he sees that I'm spending all this time, on all those various things, and not kind of doing stuff with him. We do try and make sure that, you know, we where we can spend as much time with each of them. And actually at half term, I went away for a couple of days with my younger son and we did stuff together, and my husband went off with Ethan and they did something else. So that's quite nice to sort of give the younger son that one-to-one time as well. But I mean, he's a brilliant younger brother. He's really good with Ethan. I mean, they fall out like all brothers. They all go over ridiculous things. But they do get on quite well. And I think because they've got music that they do together, they've got a little band called the Thunderbolts, so they write songs and they play together, so they've got that nice common ground, so it's they're doing something together that they both enjoy, so that's been a real positive.
At the time when Ethan was diagnosed, so we're talking about 14 years ago now,
yeah,
were there people that you could talk to about Norrie disease? Because sometimes that can make a big difference, can't it, be able to talk to other people that have lived with the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know anybody at all. We didn't really know how to get in touch with anybody with it. I mean, I remember at the time the consultant sort of saying, you know, maybe don't Google it because, you know, it's all a bit medical, and actually, you know, as you do, you ignore that advice. And so we Googled it, and it was the stuff that was written about Norrie that I read was so negative and quite you know, because it was medical, it, just some of the terms it used were quite frightening. And I think, you know, we could have focused on that. Oh, you know, the future's not looking great. So we kind of ignored that and we kind of plodded along. I've met, you know, other people with disabilities along the way, and we had we've got some very good friends who had a disabled daughter, a different disability, but you know, we had a connection with them that, you know, when things felt a bit difficult, you've got someone you can talk to. But in terms of meeting other people with Nori, we didn't have that until it was really random. I was on Facebook and saw a friend of mine had posted an article about a guy local to here, actually Colchester, who was running a marathon around football stadium to raise money for his son, who's got this rare condition. And I read it, and it's like Norrie disease. So I thought, oh, I'll contact them, because he was like a baby at the time. So I thought I'll, you know, get in touch with them, because perhaps they might find it helpful to talk to somebody who's sort of been there and been through it, and sort of through that connection. Met Tom and Kelly Leggett and their son Alfie through that connection. I then met Wendy, who's now the chair of the Norrie Disease Foundation, and we kind of, it got set up together. And I think being able to meet with them, and actually for me, it really opened my eyes to things that I wasn't aware of with Norrie, and actually having a support network of things, and, you know, people have got various questions, you know, there's a go-to place where you can ask, and I think that's you know, that's really important. And I think particularly, you know, as parents, when you first get a diagnosis, it's quite isolating. So having other people that maybe been through it, or that you can just say, right, what hospital should we be trying to go to, or is there somewhere we can get information, or how do we access this? What's school going to look like for my child? All those sorts of things. It's good to have a community like that, and you know, the Norrie Disease Foundation has really opened that up. And you know, it's now got, you know, now if you Google Norrie, it takes you can get to the website, and actually the language is much better, and you can see family stories and all of that. So that's been really important.
And looking at some of the other families, I suppose having a network like this, the Norrie Disease Foundation, you're meeting people and talking to people who are at different stages of this journey. So can you tap into their experience, those that are maybe a bit further along?
I mean, I think if there are, you know, if there are issues that crop up, you know, I know that there are people out there that we can sort of speak to. And I think for Ethan as well, where we've been to, like, some of the family days, and he's been able to talk to, you know, some of the men who have Norrie, actually be able to have a conversation with them, knowing that they, you know, they've got shared experience, I think that's been quite valuable. And I think just picking up on different things, like, you know, at the moment we're under kind of children's services, but at some point it's going to move to adult services. So I think that's definitely going to be, you know, we're heading towards a point where I'm going to be, you know, speaking to some of the others, just about their experiences and getting advice on those grounds, and, you know, and moving forward, if Ethan chooses to go to university, what sorts of things that, you know, potentially should we look out for? But I think particularly around probably the health side of it, the Norrie stuff in particular, it's useful for connecting up. Because, I've, you know, think, obviously, like the RNIB, if there are issues to do with, you know, education or life or charities or benefits or all those sorts of things, you know, you can get that from that. But I think it's the specifics of being able to get to people who've got the same condition. I think that's really beneficial.
And one final question, Teresa. How do you deal with the anger and the frustration?
I don't know. It depends really on what I'm angry about. I mean, I think it's the thing that makes me angry really is it's not, you know, it's not the condition itself. It's more you know, how society puts up barriers to people with disabilities. And that's like a general thing. I don't think that's just, you know, Norrie's, but it's things like, I think if, you know, society was a bit more open, it would be much easier for people to kind of live with additional needs. Just simple things like, you know, being able to go and get an already tactile braille version of, you know, GCSE revision book, just to be able to purchase that. That's just something that you can't do. So those sorts of things really, really annoy me. And I feel frustrated for, I mean, I'm really fortunate because I work, well, I'm just finishing my training to be a QTVI. So I work in education. I know how to access various resources, and we've been able to, you know, get things to produce stuff for Ethan at home. But I know that there are families that don't have those opportunities. So that frustrates me. So I think at the times that I do get frustrated and angry, I don't know, I try to put it into doing something good, or if I'm really stressed, I'll try and go and do some exercise, or I'll try and find someone to talk to about it. But yeah, there are times where it's hard, but generally I think we try to be, you know, as positive as we can about stuff, and I think we're quite hopeful about the future.
I appreciate you going back in time there. I know it's not easy sometimes to dredge up and remember all the feelings of the time, but for other parents who are dealing with, it might not be Norrie disease, it might be another diagnosis with their child, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us.
I think you're welcome.